Ever hear a news story and feel like you just walked in during the middle of a movie? Who's who? How did it start? And why does it matter? Some news stories take months or years to unfold, and if you miss a few updates, you might get lost. That's why we've started a new series called Break It Down, to help make sense of a complex issue. This week, it's Kansas K-12 school funding.
Last month, a three-judge panel in Topeka heard a case in which 54 school districts sued the state for cutting their funding. The state has budgeted $38 million per student for the coming school year. That's down $500 per student from 4 years ago, and many Kansas teachers say it's nowhere near the amount needed to properly educate students. But K-12 education takes up half the state's threadbare budget, say many legislators. And with state revenues dropping dramatically, something's got to give. Peter Hancock has been covering the issue for the Kansas Education Policy Report. He explained it to Alex Smith, starting with the Kansas school's funding formula.
It's called the base state aid per pupil. And every year the legislature appropriates a certain amount of money to provide a uniform per pupil amount, more or less uniform, across all school districts. That's what their general fund budget is. So there's a set amount per weighted pupil, and that gets a little complicated because at-risk students, for example, are counted as one-and-a-half students. English language learners are counted. There are weighting factors for different kinds of students, reflecting the fact that it costs more to educate them than it does a middle-class child with no handicaps or anything of that sort. In addition to that, local school districts have the ability to levy a certain amount of local taxes above and beyond what the state provides them. It's called the local option budget, or LOB. So those are the two main pots of money that school districts deal with.
And then is there federal money on top of that?
There is quite a bit of federal money. Most of that, though, is earmarked for specific programs. A very large portion of federal money comes in for school lunches, for example. There's also what's called Title I money, which is money for schools and for districts that serve a high number of low-income students, money that goes directly to poverty-stricken areas. There are other kinds of money. There's special education money. The federal government funds a certain percentage of all the special education services. So there's a great deal of federal money that comes into Kansas, but it's typically earmarked for very specific programs.
So right now we're currently in the middle of a pretty big lawsuit about school funding, but this is sort of following a previous big court case over school funding. What happened with that case?
In 2005, the Kansas Supreme Court upheld a lower court ruling that said the state of Kansas was not providing suitable funding for public schools. The Kansas Constitution says that the legislature shall make suitable provision for finance of the educational interests of the state. That's basically been construed to mean that the state has to provide suitable funding and that the schools have to provide a suitable education. And as a result of that case called Montoy versus Kansas, the legislature was ordered to drastically increase the amount of money that they were spending on public schools. It resulted until about 2008, 2009, in about $750 million a year in additional funding above and beyond what had been spent before. It also resulted in some of those weighting factors to make sure that money was going to districts that have the highest need students. There was increased funding for the at-risk students, and there was also a thing called high-density at-risk, which basically targeted urban inner-city schools where you not only have poverty, but in a highly concentrated, densely populated area like Kansas City and Wichita and Topeka.
So were there quantifiable results in the higher funding? I mean, are students learning more, getting better that we can measure?
Some people would say yes, that as a result of that funding, test scores did go up, particularly among minority groups, low-income students, special education students. And that was because with that additional money, the inner-city schools and the high-poverty schools were able to hire more teachers to reduce class sizes. They were able to provide after-school programs, tutoring programs, things that were specifically targeted to meet the needs of these difficult-to-teach populations. As a result of that, test scores went up. And in addition, the State Board of Education would tell you that the gap, what's called the achievement gap, between disadvantaged and non-disadvantaged students began to narrow quite substantially.
So why are the districts now suing again?
The allegation is, the basis of the lawsuit is that since the stock market crash and the financial collapse of 2008, the state of Kansas has drastically cut back on funding for education through direct cuts ordered by both Governor Mark Parkinson at the time and also cuts ordered by now Governor Sam Brownback. The legislature has appropriated less, and so that base aid per pupil amount went down from about $4,400 per pupil down to $3,780 per pupil this past year, as close to a 15% cut. Now, this coming year, they did provide a modest little increase of about $48 or $50 per pupil. So it went back up a little bit. But basically, what the plaintiffs are saying is that it is well below what it actually costs to provide an education.
So are these districts that are suing, are they mostly rural, are they urban, or are they both?
It's a mix of urban and rural school districts. Kansas City, Kansas, one of the very large school districts, is in the lawsuit. Wichita, the largest school district in the state, is in there. So are a number of smaller districts. But they tend to be districts with high poverty rates, a large number of minority students, the very difficult-to-teach populations. Those are the plaintiffs. It's essentially the same group that filed the Montoy case. However, there are fewer districts in this suit than in the Montoy case, in part because there was huge political backlash from taxpayers in school districts, from the state legislature, about public school districts using public funds to sue the state to claim they weren't getting enough public funds. That was a very politically sticky situation. There was also a lot of backlash in Montoy against the Kansas Supreme Court. It resulted in a special session in 2005 when the legislature dug in its heels, particularly the conservative Republicans who led the House, dug in their heels and said the Supreme Court cannot order the legislature to appropriate a specific amount of money. And the Supreme Court handed out a preliminary order that said, if you don't comply with the Supreme Court ruling, we will close public schools. Now, it was in July, so it's kind of easy to close public schools in July. But there was a tense situation there for a while where there was a fear that the schools might not be able to open in August or September because the legislature was going to refuse to appropriate the money. In the end, calmer heads prevailed. The legislature did appropriate the money. But I would say that since then, there are still a lot of lingering resentment at the Supreme Court for that order and a feeling that the Supreme Court really sort of encroached on legislative authority, the whole separation of powers thing.
This is Casey Currents. We're talking with Peter Hancock of the Kansas Education Policy Report about school finance. Lawyers for the district presented studies that monetize the actual cost of educating kids effectively. How can you measure that?
There is actually a raging debate in the academic community right now about how you measure the cost of a suitable education. One of the things that the plaintiffs will argue is what defines suitable. Since the early 1990s, when Kansas and most states shifted to a different way of accrediting schools, it's called outcomes-based education, or here in Kansas we call it quality performance accreditation, or QPA. And that's where schools are judged and accredited based on how well the students perform on standardized tests. It used to be that they were accredited on the basis of how many books you had in the library and how many teachers you had in the classroom and whether the teachers were all certified and inputs-based accreditation. Now it has become outcomes-based education, and so the plaintiffs will argue that suitable funding is the amount of funding it takes to meet these expectations under the QPA law of Kansas and under quality under the federal No Child Left Behind Act. There is, however, a raging debate going on about how much money and what the correlation is between spending and student outcomes. In the Montoy case, there was evidence presented that said it takes, you know, for every $1 increase in the base funding amount, you could expect to see X percent increase in test scores. There's now a considerable debate about whether or not you can draw that correlation. Clearly, it takes something. You can't fund schools with $1 and expect them to meet those outcomes. But how much of an increase it takes to produce these outcomes is very much in debate right now, and that's one of the issues that the three-judge panel is wrestling with as they try to decide the case.
Meanwhile, the State Board of Education just put in a request for $440 million to aid schools, which will be considered by the legislature and the governor next year. Do you think that increase will make a difference?
If the legislature funds it, it would make a substantial difference. The question is, will the legislature fund it and will the governor support it? We're in that time of year now where it's kind of odd. The legislature has just passed a budget for the new fiscal year that just started on July 1st. That's about the time when all the state agencies start putting together their budget requests for the next fiscal year. It's a process where they put in a request to the administration. The administration says, well, here's what we're willing to endorse. There's an appeal process. And that results in sometime in December, the governor putting together his proposed budget that he submits to the legislature. What the state board requested is based actually on current law. The law says that the base state aid per pupil amount is supposed to be $4,492. It's not. It's substantially less than that. But almost the next line in the statute says, however, if the legislature does not appropriate enough money to fund $4,492 per pupil, then what they do appropriate is then prorated out to each of the school districts. What the state board did was to say, essentially, fund the law. The law says it should be $4,492. That was based on professional estimates at the time about what the costs should be, factoring in inflation over a period of time. And they say that fund the law is what the state board said. And there was a lot of discussion on the board about whether to go in that direction. There are people on the board who thought by making that request, they are making themselves irrelevant in the legislature, that nobody will take that seriously, and they will probably be blocked out of any negotiations that go on after the governor's initial request. There are others on the board who say it is their primary duty to be advocates for the school district and to advise the legislature and administration about what they think is best for public schools. That latter side won out in this particular vote, and I think it was a 6-2 or 7-2 vote to go ahead and request the full amount. That would be a very substantial increase. The school districts will tell you that they need that money. There are school districts, Kansas City and Wichita, where teachers who don't get paid a whole lot to begin with have not seen a raise in 4 years. They have downsized, laid off teachers, increased class sizes. They've had to cancel or cut back on those after-school programs, those tutoring programs and things that help disadvantaged students, and they will tell you as a result of those cuts, you're going to start to see, this coming year, you're going to start to see test scores declining. They say, actually, the test scores that they just administered last year, we won't know the official results of them until about September, but they say based on their preliminary analysis, you're already seeing test scores declining. So they would like to go back to being able to rehire teachers, reduce class sizes, get those at-risk programs targeted for at-risk students, get those back up and running, and get back on track to raising test scores and bringing all of those students up to proficiency.
All right. Well, Peter Hancock, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Alex.
The three-judge panel will hear final arguments in the school funding case in late August. Hancock says he expects a decision around November, but that could come before or after the election. No matter what the decision, it will probably be appealed.